civil rights attorney Brian K. McDaniel, managing partner of the Cochran Firm. Of course, as always, you can X me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hey, gang.
Hello.
What's happening?
Everything is well. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I must say that things are not really going well for the former president, Donald Trump. This happened just about 2 hours ago. The judge in his hush money case has rejected his presidential immunity argument. Trump is being charged with, of course, falsifying business records and has repeatedly tried to get New York Judge Juan Merchan recused from the case. As I said about 2 hours ago, Merchan shot down his bid to use presidential immunity as part of his defense. The judge also denied Trump's motion to delay the trial's start date. So, it looks like we will be seeing the hush money case this month, Monique. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's ready, set, go. It's go time. It's go time, as it should be. The presidential immunity defense was always a ploy, a tactic, a sham. There's no lawyer worth his or her salt who believed that that would apply in this case or any of the cases, for that matter, any of his various indictments. And I really would like to use this moment to say, good job, Alvin Bragg.
Mm.
Good job. When everybody was saying, that's not the one that should go first, that one shouldn't have been filed then, should have waited, should have coordinated, blah, blah, blah. No. He's supposed to do his job as the same way everyone else does his or her job in their various jurisdictions, because it may be the only one that actually makes it before an election. And I think that this former president should be a convicted criminal by the time people have to vote, because that's for whom they're voting, if they so choose.
But, you know, Brian, the thing about this is the new information about not delaying the trial. But the other less new, older, however slight, is the third gag order now?
Sure.
Where Judge Juan Merchan expanded the gag order, 2 days ago, basically saying that you can't talk about, the DA's office. You mm-hmm. can't talk about my daughter. And yet, as we have seen time and time again, the former president has pushed the envelope regarding gag orders and the like. Have you ever had a client who is gagged?
So the truth of the matter is, anybody that makes the kind of statements that President Trump is in the habit of making should be expecting that a court is going to move with respect to what it is that the concern is with respect to President Trump or former President Trump. He makes a habit of making statements, not just because he wants to make the statements. We have to be clear about why it is that he says what it is that he says. He attacks judges. He attacks family members of judges. He attacks prosecutors and family members of prosecutors, not just for the substance of what he's saying, but he's actually hoping that he's going to move and motivate those people that listen to him to do what it is he's hoping they would do, make threats, put information out on social media, do whatever it is that they can do in order to discourage those individuals from doing the job that they are tasked with doing. And so I applaud Judge Merchan for making sure, one, that there is a April 15th trial date. I applaud Alvin Bragg for making sure that he continued to press forward and to stay focused on his case to be ready should his case be in a position and posture where it can move forward. And I applaud Michael Cohen for making sure that he stepped forward and took responsibility for what it is that he was responsible for, because the truth of the matter is he was the driving force of that investigation and provided a great deal of the information that the prosecuting office is going to be relying upon when it comes to trial. So I, like Ms. Monique, and I'm sure many other people, are looking forward to the time when a jury is impaneled, the witnesses are called, the questions are asked, and for someone who professes that they're as innocent as President Trump or former President Trump manifests or represents that he is. It's always interesting to me that he is the individual least interested in actually going to trial. If you're innocent, and you haven't done these things that you're alleged that you have been charged to have done, I would guess that what you would want to do is to have a trial so that you could clear your name. But what is clear is that his attorneys and former President Trump are most interested in delay and making sure that no jury gets an opportunity to make a determination of whether or not he's actually guilty or innocent of the charges that have been levied.
About this gag order thing, and I think in this latest order, there was a line paraphrasing here that said, if you violate this, that detention is possible. Is that a throwaway, Monique?
No, he could go to jail. I mean, you need to think about judges as people in positions of absolute power who are also humans. And so what you get most of the time, if not by way of temperament, at least by way of decision-making, they don't throw around the power that they wield just willy-nilly. They use it in restraint, but they don't make idle threats. So it's taken a long time because, which is why I said I never could be a judge. Child, he would have had me at hello on my daughter. Listen. It's some things. You know, like me all day, fine. I ran. I agreed to this, et cetera, so on. But you come for people's children, for people's spouses, et cetera. You bring about a different side. And the judge is well within his rights to make a decision about threats. And decide that the statements by the former president so moved the needle for various sectors of our country and our citizenry that when he says something, as Brian is saying, he knows what he's doing. It's not just words. He knows that his words elicit and incite action and violence. So the judge is right here. And I don't know that that will stop it, because I think as criminal defendant Trump,
mm-hmm.
locking me up, that's good for business, right? I mean, because then he's a political prisoner. Because it's not locking me up because I've been found guilty and I'm about to serve a sentence. It would be locking me up, stepping me back, as we used to say when we used to have to go to Judiciary Square. It would be a step back for the sake of speech, for the sake of freedom. That's the way they'll turn it. And I don't know. I don't know whether he's got the moxie for it or not, but it wouldn't necessarily harm him, which is the real reason why I think judges, not just in this case, but in other cases, are loath to inflict ultimate punishment because he just works that. You know, he spins it up.
And that brings me to the next question. Is he getting preferential treatment, even though he has complained that he has been treated poorly? But I would imagine that as, you know, John Q. citizen, if I were in a similar position and I were selling wolf tickets and violating a gag order, how fast would it be for me to go to jail?
You would have had monetary sanctions galore, probably, Brian, by now. Do you agree, Brian? And then if the monetary sanctions did not work against you and against your lawyers, because that is the other thing. But see, things happen in different areas at different times. I don't think he could get away with that before a Judge Chutkan. He puts his foolishness where his foolishness can have the longest shelf life and most impact. But when you're in front of judges that are like, don't you even think about it, then you tend to comport yourself differently.
Absolutely. I think it should be lost that Judge Chutkan was the first judge to actually issue a gag order.
Right.
Monique is absolutely right. Judge Chutkan is the type of judge who does not abide foolishness. Threats against the judge are one thing, but threats against a family member are treated much differently, I would imagine. I have not, to be honest with you, had any of my clients threaten or make any statements, the likes of which former President Trump has made about Judge Chutkan and Judge Merchant and some of the other prosecutors in the case. But I imagine, Harold, that if, in fact, you were a defendant and you made those kind of statements, you would have been on a much shorter leash, let's say, than former President Trump. I think it's absolutely right to Monique's point that he doesn't really fear the retribution from the judge, because for him to be locked up would not necessarily be a bad thing for him. It is certainly something that they would spin. He would definitely be calling himself a political prisoner and then trying to raise money off of it. So there's no question but that, in my opinion, he's been given some preferential treatment, the likes of which John Q. Citizen wouldn't receive if, in fact, they were before some of these judges.
Yeah, I mean, where would you put a former President Trump? Rikers? Rikers Island?
They have places to secure people. They have places they have people all kinds of places right now.
Do tell.
They have places to put people. It depends. He does not want to be found guilty in Georgia in a state trial because, you know, he's going to get what he gets there. But federal maximum security, whatever, I mean, he would have to have certain things because there are enemies of the state that will try to kill a president. Mm-hmm. So the fact of his past office is a reality. And that's the other thing that I should have said about the answer to your question. Yes, preferred treatment that I don't believe is justified in some ways, but then preferred treatment, different treatment that is appropriate in other ways, like he can't yield Secret Service. You know, he has to be a criminal defendant who has regular marshals and then has Secret Service because there are security interests of the United States at stake. So we're in very new territory because it's taken a couple hundred years to get to the point where you have a former president with various and sundry indictments to figure out how you treat them.
Well, one thing, you know, Brian, you mentioned Michael Cohen, and we know that Michael Cohen knows where the bodies are buried. Mm-hmm. But is he a problematic witness in that it is well documented that he hates Donald Trump? He's said so many, many times on many interviews. So could that work in Trump's favor during this particular trial?
Yeah, so certainly they'll try to paint Mr. Cohen as someone with grievance against former President Trump. He has made his grievance well known. He spent some time in jail, and so he is certainly somebody that comes to the process with some level of bias. There's no question about that. The question is going to be whether or not there's any corroboration for what it is that Mr. Cohen will say about how it is that the money was provided, the reasons that why it was provided, and then how it is that the documentation in support of the payments were constructed and how they're false. Because really what we're talking about are hush money payments to Ms. Stormy Daniels that were facilitated by Mr. Cohen, and that there are some documents that were submitted in support of those payments that were purportedly in support of their not being for the reason that Mr. Cohen will testify that they were for. I'm confident that Mr. Bragg has more evidence than just Mr. Cohen. Mr. Cohen may have been the individual or the source of the original information, the likes of which that gave rise to the investigation. But I'm certain that Mr. Bragg is going to bring to bear more evidence than just Mr. Cohen.
He's a narrator now. He's a narrator for the story.
No doubt about it.
He's a narrator with testimonial evidence for a documentary case. This is a document-heavy case that does not at all depend on the lone testimony of a snitch, a prior lawyer who let go of attorney-client confidentiality, saved his own skin, did all the things, but then told the truth. And they know he told the truth because when he pointed over there, right there, look at that, it bore everything out. So not even, you know, not even the grand jury had to just deal with the testimony of Cohen. I don't think we would be here were that the case. Bragg is no fool. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying, I mean, a black man runs for an office and has a target on his back, you don't depend on this one guy.
Yeah.
That's just not it.
We are at the Legal Roundtable looking at some of the top stories of the week. My guests are civil rights attorney Brian K. McDaniel and legal analyst attorney Monique Presley. I want to move on to our next topic. We may have to pick it back up on the other side. Okay. This situation in Baltimore, Francis Scott Key Bridge, really, really terrible for all kinds of reasons. The loss of life, the loss of commerce, the impact that it is having on the city. I live in Baltimore. I feel it. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that people in Baltimore are talking about in the coffee shops. But I think the very first dig that we are now beginning to see, the adversarial moves that we're about to see, is Singapore-based Grace Ocean Private Limited owns the Dolly, the vessel that hit the bridge, collapsed it. They yesterday filed to cap their company's liability at $43.6 million, the value of the vessel, $90 million. The discussions around replacing this bridge, we've heard numbers like $1 billion. And even though President Biden says the federal government will pay for it, and all of the complications, Brian, is this as simple as a car accident on the street?
Oh, most definitely not. They filed that petition under maritime law, which in some way, shape, or fashion takes it out of the realm of where a car accident would be, right? Mm-hmm. And so they filed this in an effort to make sure that they had initiated the process to request a cap on the amount of damages that they could be held responsible for the entirety of the case. The number that they're suggesting, I don't think is going to be the number that the court would end up at, and there's a lot of information that the court would need in order to make a determination of what the cap would be. What would that be? So the number of purported victims, there are two individuals that were rescued, two individuals who were recovered, four others that had not at this point in time been recovered. And so there are those families. But then in Maryland, there are already caps that are in place. And then in terms of wrongful death cases, there are ways to calculate how it is that an individual might be compensated that get into characteristics of the individual who has passed or has been injured. And so those factors will be considered. But the court is going to be looking to gather more information before it makes a determination of what the cap should be based upon the filing of the ownership. It's no surprise that they would file it and even file it preemptively because they want to start talking about and thinking about what their exposure is, right, in terms of what's been lost in terms of life and in property and to the commerce as well.
Monique, I'm going to let you chime in on that on the other side of the break. Also, we're going to hear what Governor Wes Moore said about that very issue after the break. Stay with us. You can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Of course, you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a bit.